Hello and welcome back. My name is Joy Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming back the fabulous Raffaella Fiello. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly a pleasure to be back with you.
It's truly a pleasure to have you back. So, Raffaella, you are the creator of Healing Exchange, a mental health education and coaching practice to support clients in rekindling their relationships, exploring their sexuality, and healing traumas, which is wonderful. And today we're going to be talking about sexual performance anxiety. Now, that term immediately conjures up certain associations, certain types of sex, certain genders in mind. And so I want to start by asking you, who is this talk aimed at?
The bold part of me wants to say for everyone in the whole world, but I know we have to bring it down a little bit. And I would say for folks who are exploring what it means to be sexual with others and how outside societal messages can impact that. When they're feeling like that's taking up a lot of space in the way that they can express themselves or how they can connect with others. And I would say on the other side, maybe folks who, I would love to say folks who are not even exploring sex with other folks yet, because I feel like we usually wait until it's kind of already done and then we're trying to figure it out retrospectively and after the fact. So I would love for us to have these conversations more before people start experimenting. So
I love
that's
that.
what I would say it's for.
I love that.
Thanks.
And why would you say that it's important to include conversations around sex and sexuality in conversations around anxiety?
Well, truly, we don't talk about sex. It's everywhere, right? It's in our marketing and all of our media and everything that we like to consume, from music to our favorite movies. But we really don't do a solid job when it comes to education, when it comes to even talking about our own experiences with our partners, with our kiddos, within, our family networks. And it really gets missed. So if we spend a lot of our energy talking about any mental health struggle, we really need to look at the different ways it can show up in our lives, not just at work, not just when we're on stage trying to perform, right? But how does anxiety impact our relationships with others and with ourselves? And that is going to include the intimate parts as well.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting, one of the examples you gave is on stage when we're going to perform, right? Because that is a time that anxiety shows up a lot. And so, in today's conversation, when we're talking about performance anxiety, what is it exactly you mean by performing?
One, I just want to say that I really don't even enjoy that that's what it's called, because it puts this pressure on the sexual experience already that it should be a performance or you're struggling to perform. And I think that in itself brings up anxiety, like, oh, am I supposed to look a certain way? Should my back be arched in a certain degree, right? I meet with a lot of folks who talk about struggling so much to even breathe because they're trying to suck in their stomach, or they are sucking in their stomach because they want to look, really thin. And it's so rough and heartbreaking that we can't just exist in our bodies when we are wanting to experience so much pleasure. But the truth is, a lot of folks are actually having sex for the pleasure of the person that they're sleeping with, right? And not so much because of what they are wanting to experience and feel in their own bodies. So immediately, because of maybe even messages that we've received, I work with a lot of folks who've been told, like, sex is for your partner, right? You do it to please them. More specifically, you do it to please a him, right? And so all of these things really early on kind of program folks to put themselves second, and they're automatically in this performance state using pornography and whatever is popular in music to feel like, oh, this is what sex should be. And if I can't do it, then something's wrong with me. And Yeah, it really gets us into a lot of trouble where we have to unpack some of this stuff later. And it can be really, really difficult to affirm that we also deserve pleasure, that sex should be silly and fun, and you will mess up. You might fall off the bed, right? It's like, how can we like go rogue? And if we're going to have a performance, how can we change this idea that it's not perfect, but it's improv, right? Like, let's have fun with it. Let's go with the fly. And if we mess up, we can. If we mess up, we can integrate that into whatever we're doing with love, curiosity, and kindness. So that's how I kind of look at the damage and the harm that can be done from even using this performance. But maybe there's a way that we can reclaim it the way that folks in stage theater do. I also have no experience with that, so everything I'm saying could be wrong. They're like, no, it's really, you have to have it perfected, but I don't know. Whatever. Maybe we should change everything in the world. Be more flexible everywhere.
As someone who's done improv, I can promise you it doesn't need to be perfect straight away. For those who couldn't see you, I'd just like to point out that you were using quote marks, air quotes, when you were talking about messing up. And I'm really struck by you use the phrase existing in one's body whilst experiencing pleasure. And like put like that, it sounds so simple, right? And yet, as you say, all these messaging from society complicates it, and we feel like we have to perform. We feel like we have to focus on the other person's pleasure, that we have to, behave in certain ways, take on a certain persona. And so I love the way that you're giving permission to just be real, to be silly, to be goofy, to fall off the bed, to laugh. And I think that those are not often words that are associated with sex and sex life.
Yeah, and if we're being honest, we are usually in some degree of showing up for the other people in general, right? So we're performing gender, we're performing race, we're performing whatever our role is at our job, right? There's so many outside things that's like, this is how you receive acceptance. This is how you get to be part of the in club. This is how you receive safety and resources. This is how you are seen. And so, if we can really expand it a little bit more outside of sex, then it makes even more sense on how it seeps into sex as well. Like, we're just all walking around anxious to make sure that we're showing up properly so that we don't get harmed at the least, and at the most, we're accepted to spaces. And yeah, so how do we challenge this idea so we can show up more fully and authentically with ourselves and then find community who's also invested going into the sexual piece? Like, how do we have these conversations with partners so that way we can all minimize this pressure to perform a certain way and just say, like, hey, this is something that is impacting me and I'm really trying to work through it. And so I need some reassurance from you. And I think it's so vulnerable, like, to admit that to someone. And let's get that out of the way so we can find out if that's the person that we even want to take it there with.
And I'm really struck by how much you're talking about how, this performance anxiety is a part of all aspects of our life. You talk about performing gender and race, performing at work, performing, and so that we see how, therefore, it's of course going to impact our intimate relationships, our sexual relationships, how it's really difficult when it's seeped into every aspect of our lives to pinpoint, what's happening specifically there. So that's why I'm curious, what are ways that we can notice that it's seeped in? What are ways that we can notice that this kind of performance anxiety is manifesting in our sex lives and our sexuality?
I want to say that the first big clue is noticing how you are speaking to yourself. So a lot of times I get this question about what's the difference between anxiety and excitement? When do you know if it's healthy or unhealthy? When do you know it's toxic or, permissive? And my first clue is the tone in which I'm speaking to myself, right? So if I'm having these There's a difference between going into a space and feeling like, okay, I'm feeling a little nervous, but I'm also feeling like I practice my line, going back to stage, right? I practice my lines, I ran it through, I'm feeling good. And, you know, if I mess up, that's okay, right? Versus if I mess up, I'm terrible, I'm shit, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm not worth it, right? So it's like this trail of thoughts that is really damaging about oneself versus one that's more permissive, compassionate, and flexible. And so when you're in these sexual experiences with partners, listen to that. Are you saying like, I'm not worth the pleasure, only my partner's pleasure is worth it, I need to do this because that's what they're expecting, versus I want to do this because it's also going to make me feel good, right? We can perform in a way that makes us feel good versus if it's coming from a place of oughta, should. You know, so being really mindful of the tone and the language and ultimately how it makes you feel. I can get on this roller coaster and be so excited and nervous versus like yelling at the top, get me off, get me off, get me off. This was a mistake. I'm so dumb. Why did I even think I could do this? You know, so looking at the verbiage there can be really insightful to determining, is this exactly something that's helping me or is it challenging me on a deeper level?
I love that. And what are some other ways that that it can show up, as well as the ways in which we're talking to ourselves?
The next one would be projection, right? So if we haven't done that internal work, then we may be putting that pressure onto our partners, setting these expectations that are also rooted in all of the isms and not giving them space to experience sex the way that their body wants to and the way that makes them feel seen, throughout all the experiences. And so sometimes I've definitely worked with couples where we're both trying to unpack these messages that are teaching us that sex should be a specific thing, right? So when we look at misogyny and patriarchy and all the isms, right? It's not just impacting me. It's also going to be internalized sometimes and then therefore projected into other people. And so even if we say, I mean, you can see this a lot even when we're talking about body shaming and genitalia, right? So we're really good in community when it comes to femme folks and folks with vulvas to be permissive and reclaim your body and, you know, being anti-fat phobic and things like that. But when it comes to male bodies, there's so much shame around penis size and dad bods and all this other stuff. So it's like that liberation hasn't really gotten that far. And in worst case scenario, it's actually used to degrade them further, like calling them names like, oh, this is, you know, this size of someone's body part is indicative of like their overall manhood, right? Or they don't know what they're doing with it versus, oh, you know, if you're experiencing vaginal dryness, just use lube, right? Like it's like this different language, tone, and energy that comes with different sexes and genders as well that I think it oddly comes from this place of wanting to be empowered and strong, but we start to oppress other people. And we know that to be true, right? And so I want to be really intentional with as we're doing this work, we have to be mindful of the ways that we can also perpetuate these things, even when we are working on our own self-esteem and confidence, and that we're not doing it in like mindlessly. Like we're being very intentional and aware of how easy it is to put other people down. And so when I work with couples, there's been like this dance we kind of have to do with helping one person better understand how these same messages that they are coming, they're trying to unshackle, right? They're also putting on their partner. So yeah, that would be the second way. So again, like how are we internalizing it, but then how does that in turn form a pathway or projection towards the folks that we're interacting with? And I also don't even want to limit it to our partners. We can do it with our friends, our family members. I remember a story I was hearing about some younger folks who are learning about sex aids and sex toys. And when it comes to sex, solo sex and masturbation, there can be this idea like, oh, if you have to use a toy, then what does that mean about you? You can't get the quote, air quotes, real thing, right? Or you're just a lonely person. And where did we hear that from? Right? So that can also go into recognizing how we just kind of vomit these things out. And especially if we have any type of insecurity, like that becomes a place where we're trying to show, like, oh, I have it all together, right? I'm desired, I'm desirable, I don't have to use sex toys, you know? And then when we are with partners, that insecurity is going to come out as anxiety as well. All right, so how do I need to moan? What does my face look like? Is it attractive? There's this trend going on where people were putting the camera underneath their face to see, oh, what would my partner, what would be their view of me at this level? And I'm like, y'all are just creating so many additional things to be anxious and insecure about instead of focusing on, oh, this is a face of pleasure, right? It doesn't need to look perfect, and I didn't need to slim my chin and all this other stuff. But we're really good at pointing out our quote unquote perceived flaws and worrying about things that usually our partner is also is not worrying about. Because if anything, we're both in our own anxious bubbles, stressed out about, like, are we doing a good job? Are they liking this? Am I taking too long? Am I going to take long enough? Whatever the case is. But we're like, oh no, they think these bad things. We're all trying to figure it out, you know? So those would be like the 3 points I see it show up in terms of our mind. And then when we start looking at the body, I know we've already spoken on just like, what does our partner think about our body? But what about folks who are navigating bodies in a way that society says that they shouldn't? So specifically looking at folks who are trans, non-binary, genderqueer, and how that also impacts the way we show up with our partners, right? So if we are really sensitive about or avoidant about our chest, then we're dealing with this fear of them being caressed or, you know, paid attention to in some way. When everyone in the world assumes like everyone loves breast and chest and everyone wants it stimulated, and that is not the case, right? So we need to have these conversations with folks to let them know, like, hey, this is something that I'm working on, or this is a no-touch area, and that's completely okay. And that it's okay for that person to want to not engage in that way. Because I think there's just so many questions I'm trying to figure out. Is something wrong with me? Why don't I like this thing? Because we're taught that sex should include certain type of acts and stimulation. So I think there's so many different things that can kind of come to light as we're continuing to have this conversation and do this unpacking work and giving folks permission, one, to just exist, and two, encourage them to have these conversations with folks so that we can all create the sexual experiences that feel good to us, instead of trying to fit into this very specific mold that, surprise, surprise, isn't even working via the things that we're watching it on. So, like, I've talked to folks in film who are like, that's not even a good position. We just do it because of the camera angles, right? Or we just do it because that's what we think the audience wants to that the audience want to see. It's not actually pleasurable, but on the outside looking in, we're like, oh, so we should move like this, and we should do this position. And it's like our bodies don't work like that. So how do we kind of reduce the shame and the embarrassment so we can reclaim it and say, oh, sex for me actually doesn't even include this body part at all. And you have every right to do that.
Thank you so much for all of what you've just shared. I think it's so important to include all of these aspects in the conversation, and that often these conversations don't happen very much in the mainstream, right? And so it's really important. And like you say, it's going to impact different genders differently. And both, you were talking about how female body acceptance, empowerment is coming more into mainstream consciousness, though I'd say only in certain circles and not in others. But like things like how long it takes to climax, or if you do climax at all, again, can be very gendered, right? In one with some genders, it's seen as a really good thing, or to last longer or less long, and vice versa with other genders. And then again, as you say, for gender non-conforming people, it's other types of anxiety that can arise. And I think that's also true for people who are disabled. for people who have a body shape that doesn't fit society's beauty norms and ideals. People who, not just a body shape, like who have bodies basically who don't fit society's norms and beauty ideals. It can immediately be a lot more confronting and anxiety producing to be in an intimate situation with someone new or with someone stop.
Yes, absolutely. And just going more, I just want to say an additional thing when you're talking about disability and chronic pain, there is so much restriction in the in what is perceived to be accessible sex or standard sex, if you will. And just being able to figure out what works for your body, if that means adding a pillow or getting a wedge or having some type of furniture, or just releasing the idea and pressure that sex should include something specific, can just be so liberating and increasing of access to folks. And I'm just thinking about times where people shared like, I can't believe I suffered for so long because I didn't know that I could add this thing. I didn't think about putting a pillow under my knees, under my back, or lying on my side in a certain way because, again, sex is supposed to be this way. Legs back, lying back, legs spread, or standing up, or whatever the case is. And and it can be really heartbreaking when you learn of that, but it can be also just so affirming and happy when you're like, okay, we're getting there. We are learning more. We're having these conversations with so much less shame and embarrassment, so that people can get exactly what they need to make sex more accessible and pleasurable instead of pain. Because I think that's another thing that we're taught. Sex hurts for certain people, and it should hurt, and there's nothing you can do about it. And just suck it up. And I'm just like, oh, there's so much pain that we're taught to tolerate in life, in sex and otherwise, just literally in life. And it does not have to be that way. And how can we also advocate for that to be a point of change in our society? How can we start teaching folks that like we can have less pain and suffering? We don't have to put up with these things. It's a whole other talk, I think. But
No, I'm really glad you're bringing that into the conversation. I think that it's like you say at the big like we talked about at the beginning, the importance of having these conversations, and you're busting through a lot of myths around sex, like the fact that it's meant to be painful, whilst also recognizing the reality that for a lot of people it's painful because of chronic pain, for example. That doesn't mean that all sex has to be painful, or like talking about what actually is sex, which parts are involved, which parts are not involved, or talking about how sex is different for both different genders across the gender spectrum, but also depending on the genders you're engaging with, right? Like most ideas of sex are very cis heteronormative. And so if you come out of that and have any kind of queer sex, then that also has a huge impact. So I'm so grateful for you for bringing in all these elements.
And speaking of queer sex, I think there's another place of a lot of anxiety because who's teaching that? You're sitting in, if you're even getting sex ed, it's probably not going to be the best, but even in those situations, you're sitting there. Like, I don't see myself, my desires, my fantasies, my biggest hopes represented in what I'm learning. And so when you do start to explore, there can be so much anxiety and shame and embarrassment. Like, am I doing it right? Are they going to think I'm a newbie? And it's like, can we all be newbies? Can we all just like claim that each time is new, right? So we're just going with it with curiosity and consent and just checking in with one another. But I think that's a really big thing we don't talk about. And a lot of folks are just wondering, okay, I am coming into a new version of myself. I am exploring with different types of bodies. And I am so anxious because I want to make sure that I know what I'm doing and that they're again, that they are experiencing pleasure, versus like, hey, sex ed is trash. Don't know what I'm doing. Also, don't know your body. Can we enter into a space of learning and curiosity? And it can be so hot and fun. instead of mortifying. So I just wanted to put that out there because I know that's a big thing I've worked with, and even in like in my own experience, just like, what am I supposed to do? This is a lot different than everything else that I've seen and experienced. So for sure.
Absolutely. And there's so much like shame often associated with sex, and even more with queer sex. And there's so many taboos around sex. And, you know, those taboos and that shame is often passed down generation from generation, right? When you see kids, or for myself, when I was a child and like touching different parts of my body, including my genitals, because children are curious. And then immediately adults being like, oh, what are you doing? That's shameful, that don't touch that, not in public, you know, or things like that. And then that immediately like teaches our nervous system to freeze or to feel, you know, uncomfortable in situations to do with anything to do with genitals. And then as we grow older, that's going to have an impact on our sex life as well.
Or to feel guilt. Like, imagine being taught that touching your own body is bad, and now you feel out of control, right? Like, I can't resist it. I keep doing it. I'm doing something bad. I feel so guilty. Now I have to hide it because I can't stop it. And I was told I shouldn't do it. Like, it just spirals into this thing that is so much more shameful. And it's not, because we have the right to do everything, anything that we want with our body. But it easily goes into that space where people are spending years trying to unpack this pattern of hiding and doing things in secrecy, because from a very early on, from a very early stage, their hand was slapped, or, you know, there was some type of aggressive message about them touching their own bodies. And I don't think, you know, parents are thinking that deep into it. They're just like, oh, we're in the store. Oh, I'm uncomfortable with it. Or I'm sexualizing my child, or I'm fearful that someone else is going to sexualize my child. So I want to stop this behavior, instead of, one, allowing your child to explore their body, and two, checking the adults in this space. Like, we're not sexualizing children. What they're doing is getting to know their body. Like, how can we create a safe space that allows the children to be children without putting on this heavier weight of what we think is happening through an adult lens?
Absolutely. And then, you know, we talked about different social conditioning. And then, if there's religious conditioning as well, that plays a huge role. The intergenerational trauma and conditioning, like, there's a lot that explains why we can feel so anxious about sex. And so, my dear, how do we start to address some of this anxiety? How do we start to have some of those conversations to work through the shame and the guilt and the taboo-ness of sex?
All right, so we're going to kind of do a little repetition here, because I already said how important I think it is to just name things. But, you know, I believe, and I think there's pretty much consensus that silence is acceptance, and that silence is shame. And so if we can, even if we can't say it to another person, maybe if we are writing it down and we're able to verbalize our stuck points and the areas that we struggle with to ourselves as a beginner, can help mute that a little bit, like take that bite out of it. Because, you know, when we're doing these things, the best case scenario that that society wants for us is that we never speak of it, right? So never do the same, never talk about it. But what if I just had the audacity to say, you know what, I'm experiencing some shame every time I look in the mirror, or I can't even engage in solo sex because my stomach starts to get butterflies in it, as if I was like standing on the type on the top of the Eiffel Tower or something. Like, this anxiety is swarming over me and through me. And being able to identify what those body sensations are. So we talk a lot about the importance of somatic work and being able to tune in to the physiological experience of anxiety, so that way we can start to, one, acknowledge it as, I understand, like, why you're here is to keep me safe. You want to make me uncomfortable, so I stop doing the thing, or so that I do arch my back a little bit more deeply, whatever it is that I'm like trying to fend off. Like, just being able to own it and admit it, so that we can release it, so we can say, you know what, this is not my thought, this didn't come from me, this came from all the romance movies that I've seen, or the lyrics to, you know, love songs that I've listened to, or the rumors that I heard while I was in school, or messages that previous partners shared with me that didn't really relate, but kind of taught me, like, oh, this is what I should be in bed. So that can be really, really helpful. And then if you have those safe spaces, be it with friends, partners, a therapist, a coach, or anyone like that, just start doing this unpacking work because we can do it with ourselves. Going through that experience of saying the thing out loud with another person that then gives our body time to kind of regulate, or we go through the experience and take the time to try to regulate and self-soothe our nervous system can be helpful. I think ultimately what's really important is to have this conversation with the partner. Like, get yourself a partner who, even if they're going through the same thing, we are committing to challenging this anxiety together, right? If I'm saying, like, I feel so much pressure to show up as a certain sexual being, and my partner's like, that is not my idea of sex, right? But if we're not communicating, we're kind of missing one another, and we're in our own thought bubbles of what we think our partners want. So if we can just say it out loud and end up being corrected, like, oh, you don't think that's what sex is? Okay, let's create it together. Or if they do, like, oh, I was taught that this is that. Well, I think maybe we can both challenge that. Or I'm not the partner for you, and that's okay, right? Because I think going even deeper into it, if we're looking at this anxiety, what are some of the things that we're fearing? Is it loss of a partner, loss of acceptance, not being desirable? Then what does that mean? So being able to dig into it a little bit more deeply, I think, is really, really impactful. And then find you some sex positive friends who have done this work already, or are, I mean, it's lifelong work, right? So folks who are starting to also dip their toe in this work, so you can just hear a little bit more about their journey and get some additional resources. But I do think that, you know, some of our standard treatment for anxiety when it comes to bottom-up approach and more somatic-based therapies will be extremely helpful. We just have to be intentional and mindful of including the psychosexual part into the work. And I think that's the biggest message, is just like, include the whole body, include the whole experience, include my entire life into whatever therapy or coaching experience that I'm having, so it's not one-sided, because it impacts everything. It's very rare that someone is just confident in every realm of their life, or that they're anxious in only one realm of their life. So we could just be really mindful of, like, oh, okay, I have some anxiety. Where does it show up? So those would be some of the things to really sit with. And as you're doing the body-based work, to just be patient, because our body is so invested lovingly, and I love this for us, so invested in our safety and our protection, that it can appear like it's getting in the way. But actually, we have to learn how we want to work with our body to create new ideas of safety. Right. So shutting down, showing up in ways that we think society wants that too, like that, we get it. It wants to protect us. It wants to create a safe environment. But we have to kind of get in there and say, you know, we have some additional ideas of what safety looks like in community. So how can we work with you and not like this, oh, gotta change. I'm so anxious and I hate it. Like, that's not gonna help. I'm gonna tell you're gonna just be more anxious and your body might shut down. So we want to be kind and loving to our body, just as a model of what we know we deserve and what we want. So yeah, definitely incorporating some body-based experiences, and we have to talk about the thoughts. I know some folks are just like, oh, we don't want to do too much top down. But at the end of the day, these thoughts came into our head from somewhere, and then they caused these bodily reactions, or we had a bodily reaction, and then someone said something that then became a thought. So we have to do both. And that's part of it. So those are the ways that I would say would be kind of step one through three, if you will, for working on anxiety as it relates to sex slash everything in your life.
I love the way that you talk about taking such a holistic approach, right? That you can talk, we're talking specifically about sexual anxiety today, but as you say, like sexual anxiety is impacted by all other aspects of one's life and vice versa. Like it's all interconnected. And I think it's so crucial what you're saying about the importance of having conversations and naming. I remember an experience I had with a partner where, not gonna lie, I was performing a certain sexual act because of my conditioning, and I thought that that's what they wanted. And it didn't feel great for either of us because it's like energetically, we could feel that I wasn't really enjoying it. I was doing it more out of a sense of duty than out of a sense of desire. And then we talked about it afterwards, and they were like, I don't want, you to do that. I don't want you to feel that pressure. I actually enjoy what I enjoy is when we're both enjoying and et cetera, et cetera. And we had a whole debrief. And then after that, things were fantastic between us. And like you say, some of the conditioning can come from, for example, previous partners, or sometimes we try and have that conversation and it's not received because the other person is also conditioned by the same thoughts. And so what do we do in those situations?
When the whole world is conditioned by what do we do to become fully liberated in our society?
Or what do we do when one of our, when we try and have a conversation with a partner and they're not able to meet us where we're at? That because through their own conditioning, whatever it is, that they're actually reinforcing the messaging, oh no, you should be quote unquote performing, or you should behave in certain ways, or I expect you to do these things for me, or whatever it is. Like, how do we navigate it? So it's great when someone can meet us where we're at, can be open, we can have a wonderful conversation, it can be a very healing moment, but sometimes the opposite happens as well.
I'm going to share that it kind of depends on your capacity and your boundaries on what your next steps could be, because you have some options, right? You can open yourself up to wanting to help this person on that journey. It may take a lot of labor and energy and time. It may be helpful or not unhelpful, because ultimately it's up to that person. A lot of folks are steeped for a long time into these beliefs, and they may not be able to see it in another way, likely because of their own sense of safety and acceptance that is tied to it, right? If I don't do it like this, and I'm not XYZ enough, and they're really holding on to that. So they may not be ready, and that doesn't reflect on you, right? But if you feel like, okay, this is someone that I care about and I want to explore it with them, I would definitely say set up some additional boundaries for yourself so that way you're not taking on more work than this person is willing to take on, that you're doing it from a place of love and care. But definitely have some boundaries, because you're not their therapist or their coach or anything like that. But it could be like, hey, watch this interview that I just checked out, read this book if you like to talk about it, and I'm definitely down to it. I would recommend that you consider not being sexually intimate with that person, especially if they're using that language, because that's going to reinforce something within yourself that can be really damaging, even in your best intentions. Like, well, I know I don't believe it. Like, there's still going to be something there that may feel like a betrayal, because a part of you is going to recognize and remember, oh, this person said that this is what they expect from you, and you're doing it anyway. You're putting us in this potentially unsafe encounter with this person that's really vulnerable, and that can definitely blossom into something else. Ultimately, I would say don't sleep with this person and don't feel obligated to do a lot of labor, and that it's okay to end relationships, right? Especially ones that you've already maybe had a certain degree of sexual intimacy with, right? But I think that sometimes folks kind of want to hold on to people. If, how can I say? Because there's also this belief about number of partners and what that means. Like, some folks want to limit that. And so they feel like, oh, let me just stick with this person because we've already had sex, and we just need to figure it out. We need to make it work. And there's so many things in there. I'm just like, throw that away. But, additionally, I know folks are working through those type of beliefs. But I really advocate and encourage folks to not engage in sexual experiences with folks where they're not in full alignment of where you want to go and how you want to grow individually. And you're not missing out on anything. Like, I promise you, like, it'll be fine. And maybe just pivot that relationship to more of a platonic relationship or a friendship or even associate. Like, don't feel tied in or tied to this person because you've already gone so far. Ideally, I would love for folks to not feel like it's taboo to have these conversations in advance, but I know that sometimes that feels hard because it is one vulnerable, but the shame, like, am I supposed to talk with this person? Or if I talk with it, are they assuming that I want to have sex with them or that is, something that's on the table? And it's like, that's what this conversation is for. Having this conversation is not a prelude to potential sex. It is trying to figure out if we are in alignment with one another, right? And then gauging folks' mental flexibility to see how open they are to the fact that we are going to change. Our bodies are going to change, our minds are going to change, our personalities, our bodies and gender, they change, right, throughout this relationship. And are they on that wavelength, right? Are they going to be someone that's like, you switch it up and you used to be a different person, or they're going to say like, oh, how can we continue to get to know different facets of one another? I think that is so beautiful and helps with our sense of connection with one another if we can be in relationships with folks like that, versus more shame coming because I just having a thought of people kind of feeling tricked, if you will. Like, oh, you changed, you tricked me, this is your real self, you should have been authentic. And it's just like so outdated. It's so outdated that we're going to be one person for the rest of our lives, knowing that so many people have forced themselves to appear to be one person for their entire lives. We all change, and finding folks who can welcome that will greatly reduce the sense of anxiety that we're experiencing in the relationship. And when it comes to sexual experiences. So, yeah, I would say if someone has not responded well, if you have the bandwidth and enough compassion to have more conversations, but don't feel obligated to do that work because you have to put yourself first so you can be mentally and emotionally well.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so that's what I would say. I think it just depends on where you are in that work. You have some options.
Absolutely. And a reminder that sometimes it will also go really, really well, like the anecdote I gave before, and then be a really healing moment. And that conversations also don't necessarily mean, don't have to be a prelude to sex, but they can be a really fun part of foreplay as well, is talk, especially with new or existing partners. Like, what is it you'd like to explore right now? And especially factoring in, like you said, all the changes and like desire and libidos and fantasies and all of that can change and evolve over time. And if we lean into that, it can be a really fun exploration and a continuously, getting to know ourselves, getting to know our partners, that kind of thing.
So I know we've essentially, well, I guess we've talked about a lot of things with anxiety, performance anxiety, general anxiety, but I also wanted to talk about sex and relationship anxiety. And I'll say a little bit more because what you just said made me think of it. But when we are kind of still dealing with these beliefs and values about sex that force us to feel like if it's not happening, that means something bad. Like if it's not happening enough, then my partner doesn't like me. Or if they are struggling with their own performance anxiety, so they're dealing with vaginal dryness or erectile concerns, then there's something wrong with me. If they're not sleeping with me, quote unquote, enough, then they're sleeping with someone else, right? So like being mindful of how these things are coming from other places, and it can also be contributing to your partner's performance anxiety because you're making it like you're making them prove to you that through sex they love you enough, they want you enough, and then their body is just like boop, shutting down because that is not working for my system, but now I feel like I have to prove something to you. And I just wanted to kind of touch on that because we hadn't really, and that's also really common. And that comes from, we, so just kind of going back into the gender stereotypes of what it means to be a sexual person, but we have this idea that men, and specifically cis men, always want to have sex, right? So if they don't want to have sex, what does that mean? Oh, maybe they're like closeted, or they don't like you, or they're sleeping with someone else. And just imagine the weight and pressure that takes up in your relationship. So now I'm worrying, are you being faithful to me? And the other person is feeling like my partner doesn't think I'm a man enough, right? Because maybe I'm okay with not having that much sex. I don't need it 3 times a day. And yeah, so I just wanted to kind of put that out because that's another way I think that it can manifest in relationships that we want to be really mindful of, and we don't even really think about how deeply these tropes and this performance pressure can really show up for us and how we may project it into others.
Absolutely. It reminds me of what you said earlier about how a lot of the time, all parties, whether it's two or more, are sort of caught in their own anxiety bubble, right? And so we're stressed in our corner and anxious about what they're thinking about us and how we feel and all that kind of thing. But meanwhile, the other person or people are doing the exact same thing. And often we can sense that anxiety can create a certain energy in the field. And that by having those conversations that you've been encouraging, it allows to like kind of relax the field and be like, oh, I'm feeling like you're not attracted to me because I noticed that you don't seem to be initiating sex that often. And it can be like, oh, no, I'm very attracted to you. I just don't have a super high libido, or I'm a bit stressed at work because, like you say, everything's interconnected. And so that's having an impact. And you and I have had wonderful conversations about sexual trauma and other conversations around anxiety and performance and all these kind of themes that people can access on the Conscious Life platform if they'd like to delve deeper into topics. Sadly, we're running out of time as there were so many more things I wanted to ask you, but how can people find out more about you and your work?
Absolutely. You can check us out at healingexchange.com as well as rafaelafialo.com. And on those websites, you can find all the socials, join the newsletters for additional training. We also have a group practice where most of us specialize in sex, relationship, and trauma work and trauma therapy. And so if you're looking for that or coaching, we have that available as well. So that's where I live on the internet.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you for the opportunity.